This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. For millions needing federal food aid, the money's run out due to the government shutdown. A federal judge ordering the Trump administration to use emergency funds. ABC's Jacqueline Lee.
A Rhode Island judge saying without the SNAP federal food program, some 42 million of the country's most vulnerable would face irreparable harm and terror over the availability of funding for food for their family. President Trump saying he's instructing the government lawyers to ask the judge how we can legally fund SNAP as soon as possible.
Some states are acting to cover SNAP benefits by finding money in their budgets. Minneapolis police looking for suspected shooters after they say one person was killed and two others injured overnight. Remains of three people Hamas handed over to the Red Cross in Gaza do not belong to any hostages, says Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's office. Deciding Game 7 of the World Series is tonight in Toronto. This is ABC News. More than 30,000 people forced to leave their homes in Sudan. ABC's Marcus Moore.
There are reports that many have been abducted for ransom or executed as they fled for safety. And this war has been raging now for more than 2 years. The National Army is locked in a fight against the Rapid Support Force, or the RSF paramilitary group. And aid agencies have said the humanitarian crisis there is worsening, with Al-Fashir surrounded and families cut off from basic supplies. A famine was declared there more than a year ago, and aid groups are calling for civilians to be protected as this war rages on.
Our Marcus Moore, advice on adjusting to daylight saving time from ABC News Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. Taryn Arula.
Start to shift your bedtime 10 to 15 minutes later and your wake time 10 to 15 minutes later. Make sure that you're doing good sleep hygiene, so avoiding alcohol, large meals, caffeine right before bed. Get up early in the morning, get out in the sunshine, avoid bright lights or screens right before bedtime.
Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Matt Nair on air.
Also, I wanted to share real quickly just a text that came in from Andrew in Maine. One of the many favorable features of Civic Media is the various hosts' willingness to engage listeners via texts, calls, comments, allowing a feeling of conversation instead of being talked at. Thank you, Jane, Greg, Boardlord, and Dan, along with the rest of Civic Media staff and admin. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
John and Cordy, now I can charge it any damn time I want. You know, I got a charging station for my EV, my electronic space car, and I've got a charging station in the home now. It was installed. A lot of money, but it's done.
It's a stop by, John's.
Yes, yeah, stop by. We're charging.
Bring your electric toothbrush. Plug it right in. We'll charge that up.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. SNAP, in Wisconsin it's called Food Share, has officially run out. Nearly 700,000 Wisconsinites rely on the program to eat. That's 12% of the people in our state. About 60% of households here who use Food Share have children. Now, Wisconsin has joined a lawsuit attempting to force the Trump administration to continue the program during the government shutdown. The suit was filed in Massachusetts and includes at least two dozen states. The USDA very recently changed its guidance, saying emergency funding cannot be used to keep the program going. However, that's the opposite of what they said until just a couple weeks ago, and that's exactly what's happened for decades during government shutdowns. In 60 years, SNAP has never run out until now. Meanwhile, officials in Milwaukee have come up with a plan to feed people. Stuart J. Waddles reports.
Milwaukee's mayor is calling on everyone to pitch in as the city and the county launch a major food drive during the ongoing government shutdown.
While things are not going the way that they should in Washington, Milwaukee refuses to wait. We're going to take care of our own. That's why all these folks are assembled with me today. So I'm asking everyone who can, let's step forward and prevent children in our community from going hungry.
The goal is to come together and help neighbors who've lost access to federal food aid. Donations of canned goods and cash are being collected at multiple spots across Milwaukee, from libraries to community centers. Local groups Nourish MKE and Feeding America are helping distribute the food to families who need it the most.
Anyone who doesn't know where their next meal will come from can dial 211 to be connected to resources. You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
.7 WRCE, news from the center and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Some scattered showers possible today, a high near 45. Becoming mostly clear tonight, a low around 27. Mostly sunny, a high near 51 on Sunday. Another chance of rain Sunday night with a low near 39. Monday, sunshine with a high near 57.
It's 47 right now.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome filmmaker Doug Prey and actor from Chicago PD, Joel Murray. Great guests to kick off a new week. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 6 till 8. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey there, Pencil Busters. This is producer Jacob, and you're listening to a special best-of edition of Busted Pencils. So sit back, enjoy the show, and don't forget to check out our next podcast drop on Monday.
Theatrics we put on there, Jacob.
Worked so hard for the non-visual audience.
Man, love that. Well, it's Saturday. You know, it is 1 hour of Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Man, gotta love this. Producer Jacob is in the house. Me, Dr. Tim Slecker. I'm here, and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, he's at a faculty senate meeting right now, Jacob. So he is fully doing the educated educator thing.
He must be filibustering there in that senate because it's taking forever.
He's like, hey guys, let's keep the debate going because that way maybe I can, maybe miss the first segment of Busted Pencils, you know.
He said, I will now read all of Game of Thrones.
Oh.
To stop this motion.
Either that or pretend. I just hope that he didn't bring his taxi driver outfit with the loaded calculator.
You got to be careful with the calculators. I preach this on this show all the time. First, I think we should ban calculators in general. But if you're going to have them, you need to be careful with your calculators. Make sure there's no numbers punched in. They're absolutely at zero. But, you know, you can never be too careful, Tim. That's a throwback to the Producer's Choice show in case people.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, if you're going, what are these guys talking about?
Have they lost it?
Last Producer's Choice, Johnny Lupinacci, and the taxi driver calculator demonstration that, it was one of the things that he loved about teaching. So that's all we need to say about that, right, Jacob?
Yeah. If people really want to know, they have to go back and listen to the last podcast.
Yeah. And if you haven't seen Taxi Driver, we've just given you something to do later on this Saturday after you're done listening to the show. You know, go out and take that and yeah, that's Robert De Niro. What was he like, 13 when he did that movie, Jacob?
I think Jodie Foster was like 13 when she did that movie. I think Robert De Niro is just a very, very old man at this point. Unless you see him in The Irishman, where they really de-aged him to look about 70. So he looked a lot younger in that movie.
Nice. Well, and that mole, though, that characteristic mole, you know, right there, kind of below the cheek, a little bit above the lip. He's got it there, though, man.
I'm thinking about having cosmetic surgery to add a mole to my face because I just lack that distinguishing feature. You know, that's my big problem in life.
What happens when you grow a new mole in your 50s?
Tim, what is this show about? What do we do here? Is this what we're going to talk about, growing moles?
Well, here's the thing. You know, it's a lovely Saturday show.
It's a beautiful Saturday.
Over the past few weeks, we have had some great guests, some great interviews. And, you know, listener feedback was like, you guys are great. You're bringing us some great guests. But where is just, you know, Tim, Jacob, Johnny, just, you know, telling us about everything that's going on in education, letting us know the way of the world, where everything's happening? And, well, we said, you know what? Let's get back to the roots of just, you know, education talk radio. What's happening out there? Jacob, I remember pitching Busted Pencils, the concept, and people going, you're going to have like a radio talk show about education? Why? Who would want to listen to that? Who would want to know what bulletin boards look like and things like that? I was just like, that gave me a totally invigorated sense of going, that's exactly why there needs to be a Busted Pencils education talk show.
Yeah.
Because we're not talking about bulletin boards and pencil sharpening and bathroom breaks and stuff like that. Although occasionally during the show, we need to sharpen a pencil and need to take a bathroom
break. You're giving me ideas for producer's choice next week. I'm thinking bulletin boards, bathroom breaks. Yeah, okay. These are good. Keep pre-associated.
Find another B in there and you've got a trifecta there. But no, Jacob, what's going on in the education world? So much is going on. And man, we've got a list of news stories here. If we get to them all, it's going to be great. If we don't, we'll make sure that we mentioned towards the end of the show to go and check these out. But Jacob, you know, first and foremost here, and if you're listening on Saturday, my guess is that the reality is that yes, the government will still be shut down. We are recording this on Thursday, the day two, right, of the government shutdown. Yeah. I believe
we're in day two.
Nothing in the news shows me that Friday, tomorrow, you know, the day before you hear this show, they're going to figure something out, because I'm pretty sure that both sides delusionally believe this is helping them.
Well, I guess they wouldn't be doing it if they didn't at least think there's a good chance that it'll work out for them and make them look good. The thing that gives me hope, Tim, about this situation, you know, is that whatever you want to say about politics in America right now, we've got a very reasonable president who's willing to compromise and bring people together. He's a uniter, not a divider. So
a uniter.
We'll be good.
In fact, I think news story one coming out from NBC, so what happens during a government shutdown? Well, yes, all of those federal offices, the people that work there don't have to go to work. They get snow days, I guess, or something like that.
Sort of, yeah.
They're you know, so federal employees are furloughed. People say fired. They don't show up to work. And understanding that you know, most federal employees are civilian people who have 9-to-5 jobs doing things to keep, you know, the lights on that we call America. And after DOGE, there's a lot less of those federal employees.
True.
But in the Department of Education, there's a whole group of people who still work there, take care of things, except now they don't work there. And like really good, responsible people, the email, if you would happen to be emailing, say, somebody in the Department of Education right now, asking them a question about, you know, will student loan forgiveness ever start back up again or something like that, you would typically get an email saying, sorry, due to the government shutdown right now, I am not able to respond to emails. However, once the government is back up and running, I will gladly get back to you. Things like that, right?
Yeah.
You know, just a cordial, friendly.
A standard out of office message.
Yes, out of office message. And according to the news, the Department of Ed people put a very simple, I'm not here, I'll get back to you as soon as I get back to work. And lo and behold, some of them found out that the message that they put in to be, you know, automatically generated when somebody sends them an email, the automatically generated email, somebody changed it.
No. Well, wait a minute. Yes. Who could it have? Well, I guess we'll see when you say what it says, right?
I don't know. And now the emails that are coming out of the Department of Ed are saying the Democrats, those lefty, you know, crazy people, shut down the government, and I can't answer the email now. Things like that, Jacob. So, in other words, incredibly partisan emails that blame the Democrats for the shutdown. And I know somebody's out there going, well, it was their fault, and that's just the way that he... Okay, there's a problem. There's a law that forbids...
Laws?
There used to be, there still is the law. Now, whether we, you know, in fact, there's some good comments in this story, but you're not allowed to do that. Hack into somebody's email and change their message, that's a whole problem. But the reality of putting out a partisan statement as a federal employee using federally, that would mean taxpayer funded mm-hmm. technology, the wires, all those things. There's a law that says they're not allowed to do things like that. And right now you've got a bunch a group of federal employees right now whose doctored emails look like they sent out partisan emails. And will they now be in trouble for their emails being hacked and somebody else writing emails for them? Will this be something that they will get in trouble for?
Well, Tim, you might think, well, just change it back. There's this crazy thing that happened. It says, hey, sorry, I can't help you right now. The Democrats hate America. You think, oh, well, just change it back if you notice it. Here's the problem, Tim, and this is we're getting this from NBC News. I'll just quote from the article. One person reported changing the out-of-office message back to their normal nonpartisan version, only to have it revert to the crazy anti-Democrat version. And they said this, none of us consented to this, and it's written in the first person as if I'm the one conveying this message, and I'm not. I don't agree with it. And I don't think that it's ethical or legal. It violates the Hatch Act. And that's exactly what you were talking about, Tim. The law that says you can't use government functions to support biased political purposes. Again, like we said, the law, do people still believe in things like that in 2025? But it's on the books, folks.
Okay. So Jacob, on this one, though, this is okay. So the email sender, did they break the law and violate the Hatch Act, or did the hacking into the emails of people and posting messages that they didn't send, isn't that another breaking of some kind of law?
Well, I would say that the person violating the Hatch Act is the one who's manipulating the system to force these messages to come out. It's, you know, you're tricking people into being unwitting mules for carrying your weird political message across through the government. So I don't think you can blame those guys. It has to be the people who are behind this whole thing.
Well, and so that's what I'm asking the question.
And you don't need Encyclopedia Brown to find out who is behind this whole thing, by the way.
Well, I was going to say, you know, guess what? And geez, I wonder whose idea or what it where this came from. Well, we pointed out at the beginning of, you know, the episode here. Yeah. Hey, if it fits what I'm doing, I'm going to do it. Those laws, they're just suggestions, Jacob. You know, hey, but, you know, more education news, lots to go on. But, hey, if you're going to hack an email, you know who to do it for. Busted Pencils.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced, also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2030. At the recombobulation area, this project is something we've covered extensively, including with an award-winning four-part series called Expanding the Divide. It might be worth revisiting that series and considering how unnecessary and expensive an extra lane is and how in southeastern Wisconsin, we're going to be dealing with construction and delays for the next 8 years in order to shave a few minutes off suburban commute times while the city streets and city problems go ignored once again.
Find all of Dan's work at the recombobulation area.
I'm Sawyer.
And I'm Shannon.
Together, we're Twin Stunts, the only twin motorcycle freestyle show in the world.
We're born and raised in Wisconsin, so we want all our fellow cheeseheads to know that even though we clutch it up, hit 12, and drift in our show, we would never do it on the open road. And there's another thing we would never do on the road. Drive drunk. Drive sober, or get pulled over. Together, we can save lives. Learn more at ZeroInWisconsin.gov. Wisconsin DOT.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses. For free, find a mentor today at score.org.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey there, Pencil Busters. This is producer Jacob, and you're listening to a special best-of edition of Busted Pencils. So sit back, enjoy the show, and don't forget to check out our next podcast drop on Monday.
They're back already. Yep, educated educators. Talking education. Well, you know what that means. Busted Pencils, Civic Media Saturday. If you're listening in your car, if you're listening on your radio somewhere, you know, we appreciate it. Downloaders, we love that you also are participating whenever you can. It is, the one-hour show. Gifted and talented. We're talking about New York City. Johnny, go ahead.
New York City!
There it is. Yes, that place. And the Democratic nominee for mayor, Zohran Mamdani, is proposing to do away with the elite kindergarten gifted program. You got to hear where Johnny Lupinacci was. He's like, good for him, man. We need to do that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Like, I love champion it. This.
And yep. And I said, well, you haven't heard.
I'm drinking the Kool-Aid on this one, man.
You haven't heard from Tim and Jacob. And I was like, okay, before me, how about Jacob, chairman of the board? Jacob, what are you thinking about this? And, how's this sitting in your bird's nest?
Well, over here in my nest, Tim, I think it's easy for you and Johnny to be critical because you guys were not talented or gifted as children. But for me, I was one of these talented, gifted children. I went to a cool magnet elementary school, and then I got invited to the gifted accelerated elementary school in my city where I'm from. And the same thing in middle school. I was accepted into the gifted accelerated thing. Now, I will say that I turned down both of those opportunities because I liked my friends. So I don't know if they actually work. I went there briefly, and then I said, I'm okay. I like the normal people back at the normal school.
So you dropped out of giftedness.
I did. Well, no, I didn't drop out of being gifted. I'm still awesome. But I'm more of a working man's guy. So I stuck with my blue-collar scholar crew back at the real school.
All right.
And so this proposition, I like the idea of not having these cloistered clusters of the gifted. I think everybody cloistered should be clusters. Together.
Yes.
That's the name of this episode, cloistered clusters.
Oh, my God.
But maybe you could say, well, that's all well and good for you to say that after you had these opportunities and squandered them. Don't take it away from other people. But I think overall it's good for everybody to be in one good public school. That's my
thought. Okay. Yeah. So bigger, broader issue here. So as Johnny said, yes, I'm not going to say where this is happening again, but gifted and talented, you know, I know some people who would criticize gifted and talented at any age, because typically the assessment made to determine that has largely been some form of a numerical standardized test. And we've come a long way in recognizing that children, people have all kinds of ways to demonstrate intelligence, giftedness. In fact, you know, we had Howard Gardner on the show a few months back talking about multiple intelligences. And, you know, and so when you say somebody's gifted, how do you make that determination? So any of these gifted programs, if you're a gifted advocate out there, you know, definitely leave some voicemails for us and some emails, because we'd gladly like to talk to you. But I'm always just, that's my biggest issue, is the narrowness of the determination. And then though too, when we talk about, Johnny, you pointed out 5-year-olds and actually 4 years old in a lot of kids, because they're rushing to get them in. And so a lot of parents will enroll their kids at age 4 if they qualified. Can a 4-year-old demonstrate giftedness on some form of a standardized assessment? And is that a valid score? And if a 4-year-old can't score gifted, is that really an assessment that they're not gifted? Because when they develop a little bit more a few years later, all of a sudden, holy crap, we missed them. And so do they get out there? I think there's a whole bunch of issues here, you know, gifted and talented as even a specialness that certain kids should get this extra attention, more opportunity, however you want to describe whatever it was you gifted and talented people got when you left the classroom and left the rest of us blue collar kids to hang out and listen to teachers drone on. But kindergarten, that's another issue that I think is incredibly important to point out, that I'm kind of really skeptical of identifying any 4- and 5-year-old as gifted. And I'm even more skeptical of saying to kids they're not at that age. The proposal here, Johnny, actually, when we dig in deep, just to make sure that we're accurate, is actually to only do away with the kindergarten gifted program, to phase back in, though, a 3rd grade acceptance into gifted programs in New York City. And so, you know, I think we got some issues. Is it too young to make a determination at that age? The blowback, as we say, the liberal elites in New York City are absolutely up in arms by this. See this as an affront. And I'm going to point out to go, of course they do, because this is a privilege that they have for so long kind of hoarded and taken up for themselves. And as you pointed out, how is it that you determine somebody's gifted in kindergarten? Well, there's usually a lot of extra resources that parents bring in birth until the age of 4 and 5 that a lot of other kids don't have the opportunity to have. So there's a whole big issue there. Jacob, I'm sorry you dropped out of giftedness. I never had the chance because I failed that test. And, you know, more though, man, lots to go on. Can't wait for Johnny Lupinacci to come back and really tell us how horrible giftedness is. We'll be right back.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
107.7 WRCE News from the Center.
And home to Matt and Air on Air weekday mornings from 9 to 11.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. For millions needing federal food aid, the money's run out due to the government shutdown. A federal judge ordering the Trump administration to use emergency funds. ABC's Jacqueline Lee.
A Rhode Island judge saying without the SNAP federal food program, some 42 million of the country's most vulnerable would face irreparable harm and terror over the availability of funding for food for their family. President Trump saying he's instructing the government lawyers to ask the judge how we can legally fund SNAP as soon as possible.
Some states are acting to cover SNAP benefits by finding money in their budgets. Minneapolis police looking for suspected shooters after they say one person was killed and two others injured overnight. Remains of three people Hamas handed over to the Red Cross in Gaza do not belong to any hostages, says Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's office. Deciding Game 7 of the World Series is tonight in Toronto. This is ABC News.
Badgers winning streak comes to an end. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College hockey, the Wisconsin Badgers women's team losing on the road in Minnesota last night 5-1. That snapped a 23-game winning streak for Wisconsin. Baseball, Dodgers beat the Blue Jays 3-1 last night thanks to a dramatic double play to end the game in the bottom of the ninth. Game 7 coming up tonight. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts.
We're going to leave it out there. I don't think that the pressure, the moment's going to be too big for us. We got to go out there and win one baseball game. We've done that all year. Everyone's bought in. And so I don't know how the game's going to play out. But as far as kind of the moment, winning a game, I couldn't be more excited.
Blue Jays manager John Schneider on the final game of the season being played in Toronto.
It's going to be fun. I mean, it's going to be 3 or 4 or 5 hours of mayhem and great baseball. These guys are going to be ready for it. Hopefully they get to slow some things down, but enjoy it. You know what I mean? It's Game 7 of the World Series at your home stadium. I mean, what the hell else do you want?
That's the Blue Jays manager John Schneider with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. There are long TV runs for half-hour shows, and then there are long TV runs for animated half-hour shows. The Simpsons has been on for 37 seasons and counting, and Family Guy has been on for 23. King of the Hill is no slouch either, as it was just renewed for 2 more seasons, which will bring it to 16. King of the Hill did have a long hiatus, but is back with a vengeance. You can check it out on Hulu. The Paramount Skydance merger has wreaked havoc on the entertainment business, first by laying off a popular talk show host, and now the company has announced it will trim about 10% of its workforce. The Hollywood Reporter reports that 2,000 employees will lose their jobs at the company. Roughly 1,000 people have already been laid off as of October 29th, and another 1,000 are expected to be let go in the near future. With all that money being freed up, maybe they could keep Stephen Colbert around. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for Matt Mayer on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Some scattered showers possible today, a high near 45. Becoming mostly clear tonight, a low around 27. Mostly sunny, a high near 51 on Sunday. Another chance of rain Sunday night with a low near 39. Monday, sunshine with a high near 57.
Currently, 46 degrees.
What's going on with Earl Ingram?
The No Kings rallies across this nation, they reminded me of, it was an organization called the Tea Party. Senior citizens were a part of the Tea Party. And there are a lot of senior citizens involved in the No Kings rallies.
Listen to the Civic Media exclusive podcast, What's Going On with Earl Ingram. Find the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. We start off the month of November with our friend and colleague, the host of Matt Nair On Air, Jane Matt Nair, looking back at the weekend headlines and ahead to the future. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey there, Pencil Busters. This is producer Jacob, and you're listening to a special best-of edition of Busted Pencils. So sit back, enjoy the show, and don't forget to check out our next podcast drop on Monday.
Busted Pencils. Tim, Johnny, Jacob. Fully leaded education talk, educated educators, talking education, talking teachers, teachers' concerns. Did a nice kind of history lesson, you know, for the longest time, if you're just joining us, you know, the number one concern of particularly future and new teachers, Johnny said, maybe, you know, some of the real tested veterans, not so much, but some form of what we call classroom management, you know, keeping things organized so that the flow works out, so that, you know, when it comes time for me to teach my lesson on the Boston Tea Party, I can really teach well and not have to worry about, you know, who's over there, where they're doing. So, you know, and that's a big issue. And you say, you know, sometimes it's like, well, that sounds really trivial. But, you know, when it comes to really digging deep into a, you know, a real teaching context, those are things that you say, and we know there are veterans out there who've got this down, and they know that it is absolutely important to really great, effective instruction. But here now, Johnny, you're saying, you know, all this time you're out there spending time with, you know, future teachers, new teachers, current teachers, you know, always hearing what it is. It's like this year, though, holy crap, the concern for classroom management, it's still a concern. Just going to put that out there. But that it's been eclipsed.
Yeah, it's been passed up by the two topics we dropped last segment, right?
Yeah, and I think about this too. And, you know, the one is back to, you know, you had said, number one, what do I teach? You know, the political climate. And this just reminds me so much of the conversations we've had with Randy Weingarten and how she's, you know, they're just absolutely saying, like, stop making classrooms a battleground. And that's what she's talking about there. Yeah. And then, Johnny, you know, we just snuck this in right before the break. And as you're saying during the break, I mean, this is all related. But then teachers being concerned of how do I keep myself well? How do I take care of myself in this moment? Because, man, and you said, you know, close to my research, and I'd say, yeah, you know, and this is pre-pandemic. And I'll just put this out. You know, I interviewed well over 400 teachers across the country about their kind of conception and, you know, they're definitely rank, but they were overwhelmingly acknowledging that particularly at that moment, and this is pre-COVID, that their mental health was seriously in jeopardy and that they knew that and they were concerned about being able to keep going if something didn't happen. That research was completed in like 2019. So yeah. Knowing that, and now, Johnny, you're saying, hey, Tim, it's up there now in the top two.
Yeah, and I'll talk about it a little bit more specifically, and we can get back into that number one topic of, like, how can we teach what we know to be the as best information for our students, given this political polarization. You know, Jacob's brought up, like, we are having this conversation in the midst of a culture war. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have this real polarization around, like, what ought to be the future of this country. And Randy Weingarten, I think, states this well. A classroom should not be a battleground for that. Mm-hmm. And it has become a battleground. So that's that number one thing we can come back to, because it is related to the other two things. But the second one I dropped at the end of the last segment, that's close to your research around, hey, forever, there's been all these headlines out there saying, new teacher shortage. And Tim, you were saying so eloquently over the years, like, hey, I have research that it's not a shortage. It's an exodus.
Yeah.
You know, we can't, we have a real problem with retaining teachers in this country because they, it's physically and emotionally disastrous to stay teaching. Right. It has actual health implications and all kinds of things. So the kinds of things that teachers are talking about, I think the reason why the topic has moved so to the forefront is one, the pandemic. I mean, that's brought to the, you know, to the attention of all of the teachers, like, how can I keep doing this? Because it's gotten harder to be a teacher, and it was already a difficult job. It's gotten harder. And the awareness of one's health is pretty paramount. Like, you can't do this job sick. And it's been, I mean, we've been a country who's experienced, I mean, the world experienced a global pandemic, but I'd still say we're in that era where there's just so much illness.
There's so much illness.
Communities. So that's one. The other is, the other aspect of that is, I mean, this came up quite a bit, and this is also not new, but it's like enough already, is that, you know, as a teacher, we want our students to feel safe. Mm-hmm. And we also want to feel safe at work. And we can't skirt around the issue that not a week goes by where somewhere in our country, there's a school shooting.
Gun violence. I mean,
this is, so teachers are speaking specifically around like increased anxiety, mm-hmm. around if they've had, if those shootings have been close, and all of them in some form are tangent to us. I mean, a classroom is a classroom is a classroom, mm-hmm. you know? And so whether that's happened, you know, 3 hours away or, you know, 3 minutes away, it's been, you know, it's been anxiety inducing to say the least. It probably, and I know this for a fact, I can say, you know, it's created for people, you know, a set of traumas. And so there is a dialogue going on around like, how are we going to keep doing this job? Like what, like almost a reckoning. Is it really, can I keep doing this? Am I okay? So on one hand, I'm excited that teachers are acknowledging it, but I feel a deep, heavy, almost sorrow. It's a call to action to say, like, I think you felt this when you were talking to teachers about their exodus. Like, come on, what can we do?
What I was going to say that too, you know, and again, you're reminding me too, good friends, partners of the show, Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, Educators Amplified, just always telling her, it's like, look, teachers are not well, you know, and what they need to do. And Johnny, though, I want to see if I can bring this where you were talking a little bit after the break, and is that concern for wellness too, you know, and Teacher Joanna, there are things out there and teachers are trying, or at least were, you know, mindfulness, meditations and things like that, yoga, you know, and they're trying to do that. You even pointed out, and I get this, that even the potential of, let's just use mindfulness, right? To come into, it's not safe, potentially in a culture war setting, to talk about doing something like that because of some form of a connotation, potentially, that, oh, my teacher is into mindfulness, and therefore they must be doing some kind of religious thing that goes against. And so then you think about it, it's like, wait, so teachers can't even practice wellness in the open. And you're like, okay, that in and of itself creates another level of unhealthy anxiety, because now I'm trying to keep myself well, I'm doing the things, and now, boy, I need to be concerned about how that is perceived. And Johnny, I'm really glad you brought that up, though, too, about the whole idea of, like, you know, teachers do now, and I hear this regularly, and this is put into the wellness, spend a lot of their time thinking about school shootings in ways that never could have happened, because it now feels really real. And like you talked about this, and, you know, we know the show comes out of Wisconsin. In fact, Madison, Wisconsin, on the map this year with the school shooting. And at that time I said, you know, this is how we know school shootings really are. When people go, oh, it's an overblown worry, it's an overblown concern. It's now like 1 in 3 people have some connection to a family or somebody who has been in a school shooting now. And so that brings it home. You know, it used to be, it's like, oh, that happened way over there. But I remember at Parkland, when Parkland happened, and I was looking at this and going like, oh, my God, a really close friend of mine, that's her child is there. And in fact, she got on Facebook. There's that direct connection. And then the Madison shooting, I was there for 9 years working in the Madison area. So the realities, you know, people are like, well, these teachers are just worried. No, they're not just worried. You know, Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna, they're not well, and we need to spend time helping them get well. So, Johnny, when you tell me that, you know, the political climate and the concern for their wellness have really surpassed the, you know, this idea of management, I'm not surprised at all, because I'll go back to that research I did way before the pandemic. They were saying it then.
Yeah. And to see the way that these three topics, if we were to kind of group them that way, kind of work in connection with one another, right? If I'm a teacher and I'm always going to have this sort of tension, because we can say over decades it's been there, and, you know, we could say like, hey, if I'm really thinking about how do I engage my students rather than have them in a form of compliance, how am I, you know, framing my classroom, you know, to be a space? Well, we know this. If you're well, Educators Amplified come out and talk about this, and it's brilliant. You know, if you're regulated, if you're healthy, if you're calm, if you're, you know, prepared and supported and you're well, you have a fighting chance of helping model that for your students, especially if, you know, you're able to structure a system that helps keep your classroom engaging and regulated. And I don't mean regulated with a big set of rules. I mean, like our nervous system's regulated so that children, and I'll kind of even say like young adults, our adolescent learners as well, can get into a groove of like, whew, I'm in this space. Like, I'm present. I'm calm. You know, I can identify what my needs are and I can have those needs met and figure out how to be a learner in this space, how to be amongst others in the classroom. You know, that's all stuff that if we're able to do that, well, we have to feel comfortable in our ways of doing that. And so, you know, if my classroom's been made a battleground, that's already working against that possibility politically, right? If I can't quite teach the way or what I want to teach, or I'm not able to be well because not only the structure of the school, but also, you know, the politics around that. You just gave the perfect example. Let's say for me, it's like I have to, you know, make sure I drink plenty of water. This has historically been, you know, medical practitioners will not joke about this, but they'll say like, they'll talk about, oh, teachers have these particular medical ailments,
right?
Because of their lack of access to water and bathrooms and things like that. And so, you know, they talk about teacher bladders or teacher kidneys and things like this. And so, you know, if we have like a, you know, a flippant label for ailments that teachers are going through, I mean, it should be telling us something that the work conditions for teachers are not healthy. And if they're not healthy, it sort of stacks the deck against these other things. So I hate to be excited about this because it's a sad thing, but I am glad that it's on the minds of so many teachers. Like it is ever apparent to them that their job is becoming harder and harder to do in these current times. And that's not me just, you know, saying this is why school is, you know, not going well, because I think that teachers rise up and make it work, but at what cost? And that they're aware of that cost. You know, in the past couple of years, Tim, we've seen retired teachers called back to the classroom, right, collectively saying, no, we want to help, but the only way we're going to help is tough love, is not filling in these gaps and covering these, you know, these shortages, right? Because if we continue to keep it this way, nothing will change.
Right.
And they have the big 10,000 foot view as veteran teachers, you know, our best of our best who retire, who say, I could feasibly come back. But then it will not change. And what I experienced as a teacher is not something I want all these future teachers to have to go through, because I believe our schools can be better. So, I mean, the three really work like together, and that's kind of how these powerful things happen. So hopefully, Tim, given that we're identifying these, you know, listeners out there, we can, you know, find solidarity in them, you know, some unity and make them priorities for school change.
Yeah. That's why you're listening to Busted Pencils. Change. You can make it when you're listening. Hey, in fact, come on back.
Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
My perfect day has sand, salt water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment.
Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Rizza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Nothing is everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
Cranberry juice, cranberry wine, cranberry brats, cranberry cream puffs. And excuse me, but my cranberry bread is ready. It's cranberry season in Wisconsin, and we're the cranberry capital of not just the U.S., but our farmers also produce more than half of the world's cranberry supply. So can you guess which state Wisconsin beat out to earn the number one spot? New Jersey? Washington State? Massachusetts? The answer coming up. Fall is harvest time, and you can see the machines rolling through the marshlands, which are flooded to help the cranberries float to the top. But it hasn't always been this easy. Back in the mid-1800s, the berries had to be picked by hand. It took another 100 years for the right equipment to be built to help with this harvest. Okay, so Wisconsin owns the cranberry capital title, but which state lost it to us? Massachusetts, which has been number 2 ever since. By the way, the cranberry is the official state fruit, making it a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Seems like nobody in America agrees on much of anything these days.
But can we agree the federal government shouldn't tax people into poverty?
If you work full-time, you should be able to afford your basic needs. Don't you think? We're the Patriotic Millionaires.
We believe your full-time job should cover what it costs to live. We think your first $45,000 of income should be tax-free.
And multimillionaires?
We should pay more to fund your tax cut. Go to first45taxfree.com to learn more. A working-class tax cut paid for by millionaires. That's an idea we can all agree on.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
Frito-Lays suck.
Fritos? Like, the actual Fritos?
Yeah, the corn ones, you know?
How do you not
they're
like
too salty.
They're salty, but they're corn. They're like the most, they're the healthiest chip you can have. They're healthy.
Any chips are not great, but yeah. Those ones to me just taste like salt. I can have one and I'll be like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah, but what chip doesn't taste like salt?
Well, I mean, that one's just straight salt, you know?
It's delicious.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Yeah. As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hey there, Pencil Busters. This is producer Jacob, and you're listening to a special best-of edition of Busted Pencils. So sit back, enjoy the show, and don't forget to check out our next podcast drop on Monday.
Oh, yeah. You know when you hear that music, it's last segment, Busted Pencils, fully led in education talk. Educated educators talking education. I know I was doing that quickly. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, producer, chairman of the board, Jacob Mead, Dr. Tim Slecker. Here we are, future of higher education. I kind of laid out, you know, what my panel was doing and what probably to sum that up, and then Johnny, let you hit it again. Is that we're making the structural changes needed to make sure that serving the workforce, our institution can actually do it well. So,
yeah, I love that. And it sounds like collaboratively in your institution, you are doing that inner work to say, this is what makes us unique. This is how we're building partnerships. This is how we're strengthening trust. This is how we're marketing better and delivering all the way around a high quality experience for not only a student, right? But for the community who's in partnership. So it's like a win-win-win all the way around. I love the examples of where, you know, research, teaching, service, you know, job internships, career, early career supports and pathways all come together and line up. And I think it's ever important because sadly enough, you know, some in some contexts, higher ed got too used to just being business as usual in this country, you know, and it and I emphasize business end of it, like the customers are just going to keep on coming and they'll pay whatever.
Right.
You know? And so, and if they don't have the money, they'll get a big loan from the government. Like all that is going apart. Like that has, you know, that fireworks of a business plan have gone off and fizzled out. So I love to hear these, not just stories, but, you know, firsthand accounts of those efforts to not put our head in the sand and ignore, just say, we'll just charge tuition more. And this is what we do. You know, that certainly has been some of the responses from higher ed over time. But Tim, you know, I will say a little caution to it as we do this as a teacher, right? And we could do another whole show in this as a historian aspect, like aspect of both your and my education, Tim, is the history of public schools. And we remember the turn of the last century, not the century that you and I were both teachers in, and then it was a new century, the one we're in, but the one before, when, especially in Chicago, right, factories were saying, this is what you're going to teach the kids, and this is what we need them for. So, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but Mark Twain reminds us it sure does rhyme. And I'm not saying that this, what we're doing now, is a mistake, but I'm saying let's also remember what our school teachers fought hard for and find a balance, right? To where that, and I think that's what you're talking about. Build that trust, have those partnerships of, you know, courageous new ways of working together, where it's not companies telling us what to teach kids, but it's saying, hey, these young people got to learn something, or new students need to learn X, Y, and G to be effective in our career, and vice versa. So where we're actually partnering, not teachers telling industry what they're going to get, and not industry telling teachers what to teach, but coming together and figuring it out. And I love what you're sharing. I think it's awesome you were at the summit, right? I'm not surprised, because like I said before, you bring the wisdom. You also bring the funk, which is why you're so special, right? As one of my favorite punk rock educators.
I was going to say, and the
I'm
punk.
Just pumping you. I'm exactly. I'm just the punk and the funk, right? So I'm just pumping your tires, buddy, because I'm excited as my school year starts to be here with you and to be with Jacob as we, you know, chop it up and really get into the mess.
Man, I love that. Wow. How do you work on that? Yeah. You know what, though? This is, Johnny, you know, and I, you know, as we're coming down here closing, I want to emphasize a really important point you made, which is the reality of, hey, we're not talking about turning public schools or turning public higher education into a factory model that continues to just churn out, quote, workers.
Right.
No, you know, no, this is partnership and really saying the best of, I guess you'd say, if we're talking about the apprenticeship, the best of worker skilled union trade education and higher education coming together in a new way that is realizing that, you know what, just training workers, that's not the future either. We need workers who are incredibly talented, who know what they're going to do on the job, but then have the opportunities to do more. Man, but now though, Johnny, it's time for your moment of zen. What history shows is that people who seemed to have no power, who did not have the money, people who did not have the military force at their disposal, who did not control the means of communication, were able, nevertheless, at certain points in history, to change their lives because they found their own kind of power, the power of organized people.
Hey, thanks for listening to Busted Pencils broadcast today. And remember, all week long, you can grab great podcasts chock full of more fully leaded education talk on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, on the Civic Media website or at bustedpencils.com. And don't be late for homeroom on Monday. And make sure you catch
class in session next week on Wednesday, and find us Friday for, of course, one of our favorite things, producer Jacob's Choice. And again, if you're so inclined, tune in at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media Network stations for this 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencil.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. Millions needing federal food aid are now in an emergency because that money has run out due to the government shutdown. To end the shutdown, Democrats are demanding extension of expiring tax credits for those applying for health insurance under the Affordable Care Act. ABC's Alex Perche.
It's more than 20 million that get their health insurance through the ACA will see their premiums skyrocket because of those expiring subsidies. They were enhanced during the COVID-19 pandemic, and they're set to go away at year's end.
Republicans say they're in favor of extending the tax credits, but demand that Democrats first cooperate in reopening the government. Investigators are at the scene where five people were killed in a fast-moving house fire in Paterson, New Jersey last night. 11 others are newly homeless. Remains of three people Hamas handed over to the Red Cross in Gaza do not belong to any hostages, says Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's office. This is ABC News.